News Talk Breakfast with Anton Savage.
In association with AIR.
But we return to the American and Israeli war in the Middle East. And with us is the CEO of Henderson Risk Group, former British Army officer and former UK diplomat, Duncan Bullivant. The latest that we are hearing reports of is that the Iran has said that they will fire on any ships in the Straits of Hormuz. Meanwhile, Donald Trump saying that America has enough armament stockpiled for this war to go on forever, and Benjamin Netanyahu saying it will go on for as long as it takes. Very difficult to get a clear picture at this stage, Duncan, but can you do your best to give us just that? How much has this broadened out, and what's the military situation as we speak?
Wow, that's a question. I think the situation today is very clear in terms of what the US and Israeli objectives are this week. And that is to effectively degrade and remove as much as possible the ballistic missile capability that Iran has put together over the last few months and years. And that is what you're seeing now hitting various targets in the Middle East. And of course, they have an advanced drone program, which is also being targeted by the US and the Israelis. But more importantly, the Iranians have been trying to get their hands on increasingly sophisticated, high-velocity missile systems, land-to-sea missile systems, to really dominate the Straits of Hormuz. And of course, one-fifth of the world's oil flows through the Straits of Hormuz. So you can see from a strategic point of view, that was never going to be acceptable to anybody in the White House. And so what you're looking at the moment is a preliminary strike to take out the military capability of Iran to damage and interfere with its neighbours. That will be followed, I am quite sure, with a systematic degrading of the military facilities that were not damaged several months ago in the previous airstrikes on the nuclear capability. The stated war aim for the United States is to prevent Iran and to prevent Iran's relentless pursuit of obtaining nuclear weapons. That's their primary mission. But you've heard Netanyahu in the last 24 hours talking about creating the conditions for regime change. And if you're going to create the conditions for regime change, and we have to take him at face value on that, that means you have to go for the IRGC. You have to go for Iran's security infrastructure. You have to remove as much as possible the state's ability to control its own population. And whether that's 4 to 5 weeks or 4 to 5 months, if you're going to create the conditions for regime change, you have to take the jackboot off the neck of the Iranian people, so that if they rise up, they're not slaughtered in their thousands, as happened recently, that they have an opportunity to take control of the country. And that's an enormous gamble, because it doesn't always work that way.
What are the implications, if that is the strategic intent, in terms of duration, presence on the ground, and the spreading of the conflict?
The IRGC, the theocratic control of the nation is well established, and has been well established for over 50 years now. These are networks that spy on their own people, abduct, torture, murder their own people, and spread terrorism and death and destruction around the region through their proxies and through direct action. That isn't going to go away overnight. And I think it's, you know, if you wanted to sort of get the crystal ball out and look at what does regime change look like in Iran, it probably looks like fractions of the IRGC holding on to various communities, various ministries, various elements of infrastructure, and a sort of near civil war developing over the next sort of few months to years as control is sought. But the idea that the regime is simply going to disappear into the night, I think, is hard to imagine. But having said that, the Israelis know better than anybody else what is likely to happen in the country, because it is their business to know what is happening in Iran on a daily basis, and they have it totally infiltrated from an intelligence point of view. And I think that they would not be taking this gamble at this point unless they felt there was a very real chance that the current regime could be toppled. What that looks like afterwards and going forwards, it's never easy to say. But what this doesn't end up with is American boots on the ground. This is not another Iraq. And I think everybody's assuming that there's going to be some sort of ground action. I don't see that happening with this administration.
Briefly, Duncan, what does it say about the shifting alliances and relationships around the world? Because obviously this is a joint attack between Israel and the US, and notably the Europeans left out of it. And now we see Donald Trump saying that he's, quotes, very disappointed with Keir Starmer, and saying that he is sad to see that the relationship between the US and the UK is, quotes, not what it once was.
Yeah, he's definitely turning the screw on Keir Starmer. They're not natural allies. And Starmer, of course, is managing an increasingly difficult, fracturing political scene in the UK, where the Islamic bloc vote or the removal of it is costing the Labour Party elections, as we've recently just seen. But let's just finish on one issue now for the United States and their view on this thing from a geopolitical point of view. We're all focused at the moment on what's happening in the Middle East. We're all focused on what's happening with Israel, and we're all focused what's happening with Iran. China is a major part of this. 20% of China's oil, and China is dependent on imports for its oil, come from the shadow fleet, come from the black market, and most of Iran's oil goes to China. And this is, if you look at what has happened in Venezuela in the last couple of months, the oil that was flowing from Venezuela to China has now been severely impaired. There have been attempts now to remove Russian trading, black market trading, and now this will have an impact on China's supply of oil. Look at it from that perspective, and then look at it from the Israeli perspective of a desire for regime change, and also looking at removing the possibility of obtaining nuclear weapons. And I think that starts, you know, we start to see a much bigger picture here, not just a regional conflict.
Duncan, thank you very much. Duncan Bullivan, CEO of Henderson Risk Group and former British Army officer and former UK diplomat. And we stay with that geopolitical view because, of course, the UN Security Council had an emergency session on Saturday and condemned the US and Israeli airstrikes, and condemned retaliatory airstrikes as well, as having breached the sovereignty of Bahrain, Iraq, Jordan, Kuwait, Qatar, Saudi Arabia and the UAE. Jane Kinnamont is with us. She's chief executive of the United Nations Association in the UK. Jane, to some extent, this is further evidence, isn't it, of America deciding that the UN is somewhere between irrelevant and defunct?
It certainly seems that the US wants to relegate the UN to a secondary position, where it essentially just supports the efforts of the US to run the world. I mean, just yesterday you had Melania Trump cheering a session of the UN Security Council, ironically enough, on the fate of children in conflict, not too long after reports had come through of more than 100 Iranian schoolgirls being killed in what appears to have been an airstrike on a school. The full story of that is not yet clear. Donald Trump does want the UN to work with him and to authorise his actions. He has not pulled American funding entirely out of the UN, but he's cut it, seemingly in the hope that the UN will then keep coming back to him, sort of hoping that he will be more generous. He has recently, you know, starting at Davos, announced the formation of the so-called Board of Peace, which brings a number of world leaders who are friendly to him together, with an apparent mission to bring about global peace, starting with Gaza, with ambitions to move on further. So it is a time when the UN system really needs to step up. And I think, you know, many people around the UN feel that they need to be leading more in offering solutions to global conflict. But it is hindered by the fact that both the US and Russia frequently use their veto at the Security Council to prevent action on the wars that they're involved in.
And whatever about the aspiration to be more involved and to take a leadership position, what about the how? Is that something that the UN can practically do?
It has a number of assets that are quite different from what the US has to offer. One of those is that generally the UN is regarded as neutral. Another is its convening power. You know, this is the organisation that every year brings together almost every head of state in the world Mexico one opportunity to sit down together at the General Assembly and talk. Now, a lot of the time, they spend those time kind of reciting pre-prepared speeches, but they do talk informally in back rooms around the UN headquarters. So it has a convening power that is unparalleled when you want to bring all sides together. It also has huge expertise in peacemaking, but of course the model it offers is different to Donald Trump's model, because it is about inclusive peacemaking. It is about how do you get everybody involved around the table to negotiate rather than to agree a solution. It also has a lot of the technical expertise that you need to solve problems. So, you know, I think the previous analysis from Duncan did miss out that Iran's nuclear program had been previously entirely under international inspections and controls that satisfied the world, and that was administered by part of the UN system, the International Atomic Energy Agency. In the future, there is going to be also a need to secure nuclear materials that is currently its whereabouts is currently unknown in Iran during this war. And again, it's likely that the UN will need to be the organisation that is providing the inspectors and the expertise to help clean up the mess.
Jane, thank you very much. Jane Kinnamont, who is Chief Executive of the United Nations Association UK. 53106 if you want to get in touch with the show, or 087-1400-106 on WhatsApp, text to say, apart from the politics, this is war. And this war will leave thousands more people without a home, more devastation, more food and water lines, more people on the move, to add to the already hundreds of thousands on the move or living in shanty towns because of one war or another. When will the influential peacemakers find the courage to stand up and say enough? If you have a view, 53106 or 087-1400-106. A little bit later in the programme, we're going to be analysing the impact on travellers, because, of course, an awful lot of global air traffic transits through Dubai and that wider region. And there are tens of thousands of Irish citizens both travelling through and living in the area. And we'll get advice as to what you can do if you have travel plans and those plans either directly disrupted or likely to be.
News Talk Breakfast with Anton Savage.
In association with AIR.
Weekday mornings at 7. News Talk. Conversation that counts.